Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net. He's out of Windsor, Illinois. John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Aaron Curtis of Midco Commodities in Bloomington, Illinois. And Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson in Hollister, Missouri. Commodity Week can be found online. You can listen to it on demand anytime you'd like on our webpage at willag.org, in iTunes, the Google Play Store, and now in Spotify. Let's begin with this question. I think I'll start with you, Matt Bennett. I'm a little concerned about basis levels in the western United States, where the floodwaters are inundating a large part of Nebraska, parts of Iowa, the Dakotas, Kansas, and Missouri. My initial thought was that this would cause a deepening of the basis or a widening of the basis, but eventually it'll have to bounce back, I suppose. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, if you've seen the outage maps on some of the rail lines like the BNSF, obviously there's not any grain moving. It can't move at this stage of the game. That also is an area of the world that consumes a fair amount of corn. And so we've lost corn. You've got bags underwater. If they get moved at all, very high risk for those to rupture. And so there's definitely going to be corn that is going to leave the grid, if you will, and have to be replaced at some point. So I fully expect that basis is going to have to pull some bushels in. At the same time, though, logistically speaking, that's going to be almost impossible, at least in the short run. And so it's going to be very complex. But I do think as you continue to move forward, basis is going to be artificially stronger than what it would typically be, because they're going to have to come up with some corn to replace what they've lost.
Aaron Curtis, how wide of an area do you think this will impact, meaning how far back into, for instance, Iowa, to the Mississippi or Illinois rivers will it come?
Well, I think for the most part across the Corn Belt, at least this week, we've seen values, at least corn-wise, mostly steady to better, and I think that could continues to speak of a couple things. First of all, the farmer, with the exception of a little bit of activity today, has just been absent from this market for few weeks, with this market continuing to set lower trend here until the last couple days here. But for the most part, we just haven't had much replacement, so it's just been pretty quiet as far as any farmer movement, and that's helping basis overall. Now, Nebraska specifically, we've seen kind of the opposite. We saw Columbus, ADM Columbus there. If you've seen the pictures around the internet here today, just surrounded by water, their basis is down about 20 cents this week because they just cannot get anything to come in and don't need any product at this point because they're just dealing with flood issues. But for the most part, this weather has continued to offer some support to basis because, A, the farmer can't get down the gravel road because it's too wet, or we've got snow in some parts of the Corn Belt still, transportation issues like Matt mentioned. We've seen the Hereford markets continue to stay fairly firm because of the secondary car market, P&Ws as well. It's just a lot of impact, and we continue to see barge freight pretty well supported because of the issues we have up along the Mississippi, Illinois, and Ohio rivers. So that looks like that's going to continue to be an issue moving forward. We got a lot of snow melt coming down the river here at some point over the next few days. So it looks like transportation is going to be the key here, Todd, moving forward, at least from the basis standpoint. So we'll see. Hopefully we get some of that straightened out. But it looks like we've got a few days before the weather kind of straightens out.
Jackie Vakes, your view on the transportation side of this?
Well, I think, when you look at the barge situation, we've seen just tremendous increases in cost. And it's because there aren't enough barges to be able to handle product. And so I think that's something that we're going to have to deal with for a long time to come as this thing continues to go further south. You know, this isn't going to stop. It's coming down the river. And so I think in general, it's just going to be a challenge all the way for anybody to get what they truly need. And I agree with Aaron. Farmers are sitting on it. They're not doing anything. you know, nothing's moving basically anywhere because of what the market's been doing. And so when they do have to move it, they're going to require better basis is what I think.
I want to return maybe, Aaron, to you for just a second. So what you and Jackie have described to me should erode basis. I mean, is that the correct assumption?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, typically, right, when we have lack of farmer movement, that's going to support basis. But every day that we go by, the farmer doesn't sell grain, right, that just narrows that window between now and next harvest. We can get into another long discussion on whether or not the farmer carries crop between old crop and new crop. We'll see what happens when we get closer. But there's a lot of grain, both corn and soybeans, that got to find a home or move into the channels here before harvest. So that just is going to stress transportation even more this summer, and that theoretically should be a kind of a drag on basis levels once this stuff really starts to move.
John Bondurant, I want to come to you now in the Memphis area, and I want to talk about what planting conditions have been like, whether farmers usually at this point are moving, and how much they've been able to move so far this year.
Planting's almost zero. I mean, it's just been wet as it can be. There's a little bit of field work was done yesterday and last night. And river's high, and we got seep water and all sorts of stuff, but in general, almost nothing has been planted. A little bit planted in central Mississippi this week.
And what's your view of the river system and how it's been acting so far and what basis would look like up and down it?
Well, the river's just high, and it's going to stay high for a long time. I mean, we're going to stay really high all the way into May. So that's an interesting point. And the other thing is, when do we plant? I mean, if you dry out and then it rains and you wait and you rain again, I think, say, April 15th, if we hadn't got any corn in the ground, it's going to go somewhere else. It's going to go to beans or cotton.
Yeah.
Belly. Everything's going to cotton. Yeah. It can go to cotton.
Well, one of my biggest concerns more than anything, and this is just when I think about the infrastructure situation on the river and all of the issues that we've had in the past years, you know, with the dams and locks being down for repairs, we know a lot of them are not in great shape. I think we all need to take a step back and say, what happens if we lose one of those? In, you know, each year that we have this type of a circumstance and you've got ice that's breaking up and you've got everything else happening and flooding, makes it even worse. And so I think all of us in the agriculture community should be standing on our representatives and saying, you have to do something to repair the locks and dams. We can talk all we want to, but we're not going to move any barges if some of those locks and dams start going out.
Okay, on that note, and I know maybe that Matt might deal some with this, but I'm really sure that you will have, Aaron, been dealing with this. In 2020, the Illinois River will mostly be closed because there will be repairs that are happening to the lock and dam system. What are your concerns there, and how much have you talked about that in-house and what it means for marketing corn and soybeans?
Well, from our standpoint, there's a lot of unknowns still, Todd. I mean, obviously, July 1st of 2020, they're going to close the Little Grange Lock, which is the southernmost lock on the Illinois River, for 120 days. We'll see how weather cooperates or doesn't cooperate with that. We'll know more, obviously, when we get there. But they're also going to shut down two other locks in the northern part of the Illinois River and repair those as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a big transportation cog that's kind of taken out of the flow of grain here next summer. So how it impacts the market, I mean, just on the offset, it would look like it'd be a little negative for basis, but, you know, we don't know what the demand profile is going to be a year and a half from now. We don't know what crop production is going to be a year and a half from now. So there's a lot of unknowns that we'll have to kind of work through as we get closer, but you know, if you shut down a big transportation system, obviously it's going to probably have some impact on a base. But
it'll have to spider out by rail and truck in order to fill in those.
Yeah. There's a lot more end user, or a lot more processing in northern Illinois than there was 20 years ago. A lot more rail access to move past the river. We've seen all the development in St. Louis here over the last few years. So talking about all that will kind of help keep things kind of moving. But as far as the severity of the impact, I think it's a little too early at this point to really have a good feel on that.
Now, coming back to the day at hand, and I want to turn to you, Matt Bennett, because there have been a lot of things happening. Of course, we have the problems in Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, the Dakotas, Missouri at this point. The Chinese now are saying, hey, we might buy corn as early as April. That is a supportive factor. We've lost probably supply in the area, no doubt lost supply in the area that is impacted by the floodwaters. And we're still late in the growing season, or we're not late, we're early in the growing season, but anticipating that we're going to have a late start because of the rainfall. How does it all play into old crop corn sales in your mind?
Well, I definitely agree with a lot of what these guys have already said. I think whenever you look at old crop sales, if I was going to be a producer sitting here looking at the way basis levels have acted to date, I have to look long and hard at what further rally would do as far as cash grain movement might be, which would obviously impact basis levels. So, you know, most of the originators that I've talked to have indicated that if you get some sort of a quick hit rally on whether it's a trade deal or maybe it's a friendly number next Friday for acreage. But if you get a quick rally, most of them are indicating to me that you're going to lose a fair amount of it towards basis. So, you know, a producer that maybe wants to get a few bushels moved, I mean, gee whiz, this basis looks pretty good to me. It might not be a bad idea to transfer some ownership to paper if you're still friendly. There's nothing that says you have to do that. But I still feel like corn's got a story here, especially, you know, with the funds as short as what they are. I just cannot imagine that they're going to hold that kind of short position into the growing season and hold it through the growing season. That's not something they've been doing in the past, and I don't expect that they're going to do it this year, especially with the agronomic challenges we've got hanging over from last fall coming into this spring. Every producer I know, especially west of Mississippi, needed an early spring, and they're not getting anything close to that.
Hey, Jackie, we've had a whipsaw season so far in the marketplace where we've been on not quite both ends of the spectrum, because the lows seem like they've been really low and the market has felt really depressed when it's gotten to those lows. But there have been times where the market feels more like it's going to move. This is actually one of those. How do you talk to producers about the amount of grain that they have left and whether they should market or not?
Well, I think, you know, I think Matt brought up a great thing that we deal with all the time, and that is if we get a bounce, can you be confident that you're going to be able to get all of the bounce, or what is your basis going to do? Is it going to eat it alive? I mean, we saw this back in the late 90s. We'd get a bounce in the futures and the basis would widen. We'd get a drop in the futures, basis would tighten. And in other words, you know, they didn't have a need to really chase the grain. And that's kind of where we are at this point in time. Now, when I look at the futures, you know, I'm of course an oldie, but you know, there's only not even 12 cents a carry from December 19 to December 20. That tells me that the futures are saying, you know, we want to get the grain. The carry is better right here, but we want to get it prior to the beginning of next year. And so I think, you know, I've talked to guys, they've got to stay on top of their basis. If you find a good basis, you've got to lock that basis. You don't have much choice to do it. And I mean, there are ways that a person can use the markets to be able to add to it if you have to. But I just think that they can't sit back and say, oh, these markets are going to go through the roof because we have this flooding going on, because we know that that doesn't always happen.
John Bondurant, do you have bits of wisdom on old crop corn sales?
I find myself somewhat bullish on corn. I think the fundamentals are interesting. And you think about 2011 and 13 when we had prevent plan of 11 and 9 million acres. And good Lord, if you take that kind of acreage off of crop mix, it's just bullish all around. Basis wise, I don't know what I think. I think my theory has always been trading the basis and trading the price are two different distinct deals. When the basis is strong, sell it. And don't think about pricing the whole thing at once. Sell the basis, and then if the futures get the price you like, then lock in your futures, but they're separate operations in my mind. I think the corn balance sheet is explosive.
How explosive do you think it could be?
Well, let's just say if it ends up wet and we lose under, say we plant under 90 million acres of corn, which is very possible, and we have ponding problems and all that kind of stuff, and the yield per acre ends up 170-ish. My Lord, you got under a billion bushels of corn. So I think it's an explosive setup from that point of view. On the other hand, I think soybeans are a disaster. But let's just say you had 90 million acres. That would be sort of like 82.6 for harvest times, say, 170. That's a crop of 14 million. Well, now you talk about a sub-1 billion crop carryover. So I think corn is interesting, very interesting. And if we lose a lot of prevent plant, it's bullish across everything.
If we don't do as many prevent plant acres, is the corn limited very much in your mind by the disaster that you call soybeans?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the other side of the corn. China's hog herd has gone down dramatically. That means their corn and meal consumption goes with it. And that's not good. And then you look at Chinese live births this year with 60-year low. Population around the world isn't changing very much, and yield per acres are going up with technology. So I don't think it's not a good long-term play for farmers. I'm a farmer, but that's the way I see it. And soybeans, it's going to be, if you don't have prevent plants, you're going to have over a billion bushel carryover again next year.
Let's turn our attention to pricing out old crop soybeans, because there are still beans left to worry about. I'll start with you, Aaron. What's your thought or plan for producers for the next several months?
Yeah, it's hard to get very friendly beans. Obviously, if you're a fundamentalist, there's just not a lot of positive reasons, unless we get some sort of a trade deal that really outlines some sort of a renewed buying from the Chinese on soybeans. But, you know, the market's still just in this kind of wait-and-see mode. We have seen values, at least the May futures, close towards the end of this week, kind of back at the high end of, the last couple-week ranges. So I'm still looking for some sort of recovery back to the top end of the range, May futures back to 930, 940, somewhere in that area. I think we've got enough short bean funds in there that as we move into kind of this spring time frame, we'll get a little bit of bounce here. But I think producer needs to be watching that area pretty closely on old crop, 930, 940, and kind of clean up some sales if you're still holding on to some beans. And we know, at least across the Corn Belt, that the farmer is still holding on to a sizable amount of old crop soybeans. So another thing to keep in mind, if we engage the farmer in any big way, that may serve to act as kind of an anchor to futures prices here moving forward.
Jackie Vakes, do you think that 930, 940 area, that's the top of the market, is someplace that producers really ought to market old crop soybeans?
Boy, if we're fortunate enough to get there, I would certainly say that. Again, you got to go back and look at where your basis is. You know, we've got major overhead resistance. We hit it today at the 200-day moving average in May beans at 912. And then you take and you look at 100 days at 916. We got to get through all of that before we can get anywhere near this. So it's going to take something pretty important to shove us to that level. But you got to be on the ball. I'm with John. You know, you sell the basis and you wait to plug in your futures, but you just can't take a chance on what's going to make this basis get any tighter. Even if we get a trade deal, we just went up 100 million metric tons down in Brazil on ending stocks this last week, because they understated the crop. How much more do we have to have here? You know, I'm afraid what's going to happen, Todd, is that we're going to get a trade deal. We're going to get a bounce, and, Aaron could be right. We might bounce to that 930, 940 level, but we're not going to be there very long.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that. I guess the way I look at soybeans is that, you know, I had a producer call me today and say that they were that someone was trying to buy some beans 35 to 40 cents under. And so if I just do some simple math here, this guy was in Central Illinois, and say we're selling maybe 870 beans, 870 plus $1.65 times 75 right. bushel beans. If you can't make money there, then we've got something wrong. And so I guess, you know, just from simple economics, how bullish do I want to be? Do I think that we can get a 20, 30 cent rally in beans? I don't know that I have any confidence in that right now. Now, with that being said, I'm sure as heck not short in the bean market, because I can't figure out the bean market, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think any producer needs to try to figure it out either. I think we just need to look at what's the bottom line here. And if you still are a little bit friendly and you want to trade a trade deal, you know, buy a cheap call or do something on paper that has limited risk. But just, you know, I don't want to get super friendly here on beans. I'm like what John and Jackie were saying here, fundamentally, and I think Aaron said it as well, fundamentally, I mean, how do you make a bullish case for beans? It's just a pretty desolate existence there. And so I'm not friendly there. I would like to move most of these beans. And if you want to stay long, do something that has limited risk.
What's your thought process for next week's grain stocks report, Matt?
You know, with grain stocks, I think that you might see with corn a little more disappearance than what people have thought. You know, as far as, you know, livestock numbers are good. And quite frankly, the weather, especially in areas where we have a lot of cattle, has been fairly cold this winter. And so I'm not so sure that we have pegged that exactly right. So I'm not sure that you're going to see more disappearance than, you know, like outside of the range by any means. But by all means, I think that you could see a fair amount of supportive fashion, I guess, out of that stocks number. And then the acreage number, I guess, while we're talking, you know, it's just anybody's guess. I think that it's going to be discounted pretty quickly due to the nature of this year. I think you got more swing acres than we've seen in 20 years, personally, you know, just because of the nature of last fall.
What do you think, and I think I'll go around the horn with this, what do you think the allocation of those acres will be? And by that, I don't mean corn and soybeans. What I want to know is where you think the largest change in rotation will come, if there is such a thing, or will everybody stick with their rotations? And Matt, why don't you start?
I think your biggest drop in soybean acres is going to be in North Dakota, based upon the guys I talked to. They just, you know, a lot of those guys are saying they haven't been able to make a whole lot of money with soybeans. Of course, the basis just throttled them last year. As far as corn goes, I think Iowa sticks with corn, Nebraska sticks with corn on similar percentages, and those guys have told me they're going to do so. They don't know when they're going to get it planted, and they're very concerned about the agronomics this year, but they certainly want to plant corn. And so, you know, I think your areas of major fluctuation would probably be that North Dakota area. I think that those guys can plant 15 different crops. It's a completely different world. But then when you get back into Illinois and Indiana, I think you're going to see fairly similar rotations to what we've saw the last couple of years, because the kind of bean income we've seen the last several years is going to be kind of hard to ignore.
Aaron, your discussion points for acreage and where it will change most?
It sure seems like as we've gotten further and further through the winter, the stick to my rotation has been a lot more popular answer here versus what we maybe would have saw early last fall when, you know, the market was kind of thinking more corn acres, and most of the chat rooms were thinking more corn acres as well. But obviously the fall didn't cooperate for some of that field work. We've seen, you know, not a lot of changes in prices, but at least some sort of stabilization in prices. So I think more and more kind of stick to my rotation. I agree with Matt. I think you're going to see a lot more change up in that Northwest Corn Belt. The Delta, of course, is behind at this point. There's too wet. I think the concern for me is that if this wet weather pattern kind of persists, that it forces a few more beans to be planted. And as we know, speaking earlier, the balance sheet doesn't need any more bean acres. That just continues to create a very situation for soybeans into the next marketing year as well.
I think I'll jump in here with a text that I have gotten from somebody that's in that Fargo area who says that they think in their neck of the woods the trending plan right now is to plant 100-day corn. I think that's an interesting thought. Some kind of small grain in either beets or sunflowers, and to bypass most of their soybean acres. And that they're just looking really wet and at a late spring and moving into crisis management mode as they deal with the flooding and the frost not coming out until mid-June. Jackie Vakes, your view of what things will look like and where things will change.
Well, I agree with both the guys. And the biggest change, I think, is going to be North Dakota. You're going to see some in South Dakota. You know, and it's interesting that you mentioned 100-day corn, because when you live in Wisconsin, the highest range you normally see is about 95-day. So most of us who sit down in the Illinois area that plant the higher numbers don't even know the other ones exist. We went all the way down to 82-day corn. So you can't ever count corn out. But I think that I agree with Aaron in some respects. You know, we looked at a lot of expansion in the guys I've been talking to in Nebraska, planting more corn, less beans, which was a surprise to me. But now with the flooding, and some of those areas probably will be forced back into putting some beans in. So I don't think the three I's have changed. We might see some change on the East Coast in the Carolinas, but I think that in general, the report that we get next week may not look anything like the report we actually see in June, you know, because the intentions are already there. And so, you know, you just don't know with the way the weather is.
Finally, John, do you have anything to add on where you think changes will come?
Well, I kind of expect a little less corn acreage, a little more bean acreage than other people. And another thing that bothers me somewhat is farmers are not in very good financial shape. And you may have some say, well, I can plant I can risk a lot less planting soybeans than planting corn. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a little bit more bean acreage and less corn acreage than is popular thought. Also, I agree about the stocks and all positions. I think that could be bullish on corn. Of course, down the south, we're all for cotton. You can't make any money at $4 corn. You can't make any money at $9 beans. You just can't do it.
So I did have a question about that, John. So if you go across the southeast, do you think that the producers who have been planting more corn acres in Georgia, for instance, will they go back to cotton this year, or will they plant beans?
Well, the profit is hugely in favor of cotton. I mean, just hundreds of dollars, yep. $200-$300 an acre. So you're going to plant all the cotton your picker capacity will do. The trouble with that one is the picker costs $750,000. So that's a big limiting factor. But just on pure economics, you're going to pick cotton hands down.
We're at the end of our time. Let's begin to wrap this up now. We'll get a final word from each of you. Jackie Vakes, I think I'll start with you today.
You know, a year like this is very difficult because there are just so many questions that are out there. So as a producer, you've got to have a good relationship with the people you work with on marketing. And I tell you, time in the office spent doing that is very, very worthwhile. So don't ever underestimate or let anybody in your family, let's say, give you a hard time about working on marketing in light of what things are doing right now.
Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Matt?
Yeah, and so I agree with what Jackie's saying. Definitely, marketing miscues can cost us a ton of money, first of all. And people that say that we haven't had any marketing opportunities the last couple of years, you know, maybe aren't being entirely objective about it, because we have had some chances, but we have to be ready to act whenever those chances come. So I want to keep my perspective on the markets and certainly be figuring, you know, what these markets mean to my bottom line, because I think we need to have some offers in. If we do get a trade deal, if we do get something to bounce these markets up, if we're sitting on our hands and trying to catch that cat by its tail, I don't know that it's going to happen.
Aaron Curtis from Midco Commodities.
I think we're approaching a time frame where we should see some volatility pick up. If you've been watching the market most of the winter, it's been pretty much deadville. So I think we got record corn short. We got a record short in the Kansas City wheat markets. We've got sizable shorts in the beans and the wheat, Chicago wheat markets, and just don't anticipate them holding on to those big short positions as we move to the spring.
with anticipation of hopefully some better news coming out of China, and then obviously the weather uncertainty. So, like Matt said, I think you set some offers above the market and have those goals set and those targets set. And today, I would say May corn up around 385 to 395 is a target. And like I mentioned earlier, May soybeans in that 940 or 930 to 940 area, and kind of take a look at those and see what you think.
And finally, John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. Your final thoughts?
My thoughts are that beans should be heavily short, but hedged. Corn is dangerous, and the weather is so wet and all that, that we could, the whole thing to me revolves around the prevented plant. If we have it, it's explosive. If we don't, the China deal is circular. If they buy more beans from the U.S., they buy less from Brazil, they make one difference to total consumption or price. And you look at China's bought a whole lot of beans lately, and bean market has gone nowhere. So I guess those are my thoughts.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find the whole of our program to listen to on demand, online, anytime you'd like at willag.org, in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, on Spotify as well, SoundCloud, also in Stitcher, and, of course, on the NPR One app. Our panelists this week include Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois, John Bondurant from Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee, Aaron Curtis of Midco Commodities out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson in Hollister, Missouri. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.